the wild ponies had taken control of their environment.
Oh, great.
And they didn't really want me there. And they hadn't seen people for like 12 weeks, which was great.
Awesome.
Hi, I'm Cormac.
And I'm Josh.
Welcome to The Living Project.
Be true, live wild.
Right, lighten up, Josh.
Take a deep breath, go for it.
Hello and welcome to episode 16 of the Living Project podcast. Today we're joined by Chris Davies. Chris has spent his life in and around North Wales as a child and now living with his partner Ellie and their three children. Chris has spent his life exploring a powerful connection with the wild. Started as a kid in the forest, moved to becoming a leading light in the bouldering scene in the late 90s and early 2000s, and now sees him running ultramarathons in places like Patagonia or doing 100 miles through the mountains of Snowdon in Wales.
Our conversation with Chris today is truly magical. Chris shows us that by going out into the wild, by engaging with the elements in the wild, in his case, earth, has really shown him who he is. It's taught him about himself and it's given him resilience and strength to cope with the everyday life. Often these activities, such as ultra running, mountain climbing, are perceived to be selfish and indulgent. But what Chris has shown us, that by doing these, you actually push your limits, you engage with yourself and learn more about yourself through the act of doing these things, and therefore you become a better person.
It's a belter, this one, so let's get stuck in.
Hi, Chris. Well, how are you and where are you today? Where are you talking to us from?
I'm fine, thanks. I am sat in my house in North Wales. And we're about 3 minutes away from the Irish Sea on my left, and then we're 6 miles from the Carnedd Mountains on my right. So we're right in the middle of it all, really. So yeah, a nice place to be today.
Beautiful,
Chris. As you know, at the Living Project, we work with a belief and understanding that, you know, human life is a fluid balance of four elements of the wild: water, earth, fire, and air. And our first question for you, as it is for everybody, is which of these wild elements do you resonate with the most?
Well, I was thinking about that, and I think all of them to an extent, but really, I think I probably feel most akin to the earth, really, for multiple reasons. I really like being connected in wild places. If I could be in the mountains every day for the next however many years, that'd be fantastic. And just from my past as a climber, I really like the feel of various elements of what I perceive as earth. The different rock types used to really get me, the different frictions of different rock types, often really being immersed in that, you know, through to running now, being really connected to the earth in wild environments, away from people and noise and pollution. And, you know, I think I've been striving for the last 35 years to find small connections like that when I'm outdoors. So yeah, I think the earth and being able to sort of feel a connection with the earth in the different ways that I can is really important to me. And I think that I feel really related to the earth in that way.
Yeah, it's very eloquently put. But I'd like to know as well, just as we sort of start off, is that earth connection that you've got. I mean, I know you were born in Wales, in a similar part of Wales to where you're living now. Do you think being born in that part of Wales has got anything to do with your personal connection with earth that I'm sure has developed over the years?
Yeah, I think it might have. I don't know. I do actually think about things like this quite a bit, really, and wonder why I'm so sort of driven, really, I think, to keep having these experiences and connections as much as possible. I grew up in a really tiny street that was full of kids similar to me. And there was a forest at the end of our road. And, you know, our parents were pretty liberal, that the whole street was. And you just used to disappear off at 8:30 in the morning into the woods with a few sandwiches shoved in your bag. Yeah. And, you know, you'd spend all day out in the forest and come back when it got dark. That was pretty much every day, you know, weekends, school holidays, after school. You were just out in the woods all of the time.
When you talk about this, you talk about, you know, almost like a physical connection with Earth and actually experiencing different types of Earth. When we talk about Earth, there's also that element of like our values and our beliefs that we kind of that keep us grounded. These connections with those elements of Earth, is that what brings you that calm? Or
I think when you're experiencing any sort of connection with Earth, I think it can be, you know, you can get different types of energy from it. Sometimes it can be sort of quite negative. Sometimes it can make you concerned about where you are. Sometimes it can be really calming. And I think that's when you start to learn an awful lot about the Earth and different aspects of it, I guess, environments that it can place you in, because you're never in control of it. You know, I think we're just lucky to be allowed into different places that we visit.
Yeah.
I've got a huge amount of respect for all of the elements, like the mountains, the sea, everywhere else, really. I think we're constantly hoping that we're just allowed to pass in a safe manner, you know.
Yeah. I know that the next period of your life maybe wasn't so earthy and grounded. It sounds a little more fiery. When you in your late teens, you went off to become a punk band and go have a bit of success in the music industry. Is that right?
Yeah. No, it did go a bit pear-shaped. Well, I don't know. It wouldn't say it went pear-shaped. There was a different path for a while. When I moved out from my parents' house, I think I was 16 or 17 when I moved home. It was quite young, really. And got in with quite a crowd. And it was, yeah, I wouldn't change anything, actually. It was amazing fun. But I was sort of 18 when Sub Pop and the sort of independent music scene and grunge was really rife, and it was just such a brilliant scene around here. It didn't matter which pub you went to, there was always something going on. There was a band playing, there was an after party, and I played a bit of bass. I think I had a bass from the age of 15. I was really into it. Always been into music, and I think with anything that I ever did and still do, I've never been able to be half-hearted about anything. If I like something, I'll just go full on into it. And sometimes that's a good thing, and sometimes it's dreadful. It was a great scene, like a lot of good people. It really brought all of the kids from this area together. And again, I think I mentioned before that I was playing bass, electric bass, for a long time anyway, and just ended up falling in with some like-minded people. And we started off our a punk band, and the guys in the band were really good at what they did, and we had the same ideals, the same sorts of music we were into, and the same messages that we wanted to carry over. So we formed this band anyway, and it just, yes, much to our surprise, it went incredibly well. And we sort of played, you know, everywhere from North Wales to Sheffield, in all the sort of standard bars and things like that, and it was pretty riotous. And it was just a really good scene. The first sort of 2 years of that band took us to some great places, had some really good experiences. And again, just some really wild sort of scenes. Nothing bad, but just good, you know, good punk sort of craziness, really. And then I think it was the last sort of few months of my involvement with the band, it all became a bit too much, really. Because I'd been climbing and obviously walking and being really involved in the sort of outdoors before that, and I sort of started thinking, this is really taking me away from a major part of my life that I was enjoying being involved in, and I didn't feel like I could do both, really. And along the way, of the sort of the younger years of the music scene through to being in the band, I've got really quite into bouldering and rock climbing, and started getting pretty good at that. And I think that there just came a point where the sort of band life was getting a bit too messy for me. you know, as always with things like that, when you're in a sort of close relationship with a few people, you start arguing, falling out, having different ideas about direction and things like that. Yeah. But it just felt like the right time for me to make a decision. Okay, am I going to really push this band forward and get really involved in it? Or am I going to really work hard on my climbing and see where that's going to go? So I made the decision, and it was quite easy in the end. I went for climbing and spending my time, again, back up in the mountains.
Yeah, so the earth was calling you back. It sounds like it was a very intense teenage period, you know, where you were finding yourself in an independent way and connecting with like-minded people and doing something really intense and incredible. But you had this moment of, or these moments, as you've described, of reflection. And, you know, for such someone that you're probably still very young at that age, to have such a deep reflection about your need to kind of connect back with the mountains or the earth is pretty profound. You know, tell us a little bit more about, you know, that moment. What brought that on, and why do you think you had that sort of epiphany of reflection at that point in your life?
Yeah, well, I don't think I could really pinpoint why, I guess, that particular moment. But I think all of the way through that sort of period, I was still climbing a bit here, there and about. And I think it got to a point where I was late for a few band practices and things like that because I was up on the another mountain by our house, the Great Orme, just bouldering there by myself. And yeah. You'd look at your watch, you're thinking, oh, no, I'm sort of late. I'm late for the band. You'd end up legging it back down to town. And yeah. I think it just started getting a bit like that, that my commitments were really lying with the experiences that I wanted with climbing at the time, really. And then, yeah, that was the decision made, really. I was still involved. I'm still really good friends with all of those people and have been. I mean, that was, you know, 28 years ago now, and we're still good mates when we're actually allowed to see each other these days.
Yeah, and you made that decision. You moved on. You chose bouldering. But climbing became, you know, again, something that you were really quite successful at. You know, you were a leading light in the bouldering scene. You climbed all over Europe. You put up, you know, first routes and did some really challenging stuff and a really respected member of that community. You know, and it was a huge part of your life. So love to hear a little bit more about that, but also the decision, you know, as well. You talked about the decision to stop music and to focus on climbing. I know that you've also made a, you know, you also made a clear decision to stop climbing and start running. For me, that's quite a, you know, an interesting pattern, or you know another key crux point, almost kind of, you know, that stopping climbing. And I'd love to, I suppose, hear what was behind, you know, the move from a love of climbing to a love of running.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those a long story spanning over a decade, I think, all of that. But I'll try and keep it in a nutshell. I said before, you know, if I get into something, it's all or nothing. And with climbing, especially bouldering, I don't know when I think I was always obsessed with it from the start. I just really enjoyed it. I was always the person in the pub waving his arms around, explaining to non-climbers how my moves went. And they just nodded, you know, kind of that sort of thing. You know, every world-renowned trad climber lived in Llanberis when I was getting into bouldering. So there's lots of people to learn from. You know, we ended up with a sort of a team of people who were all really strong. You know, we were all good at what we did. But nothing had been climbed, and we had it all to go at. And I think it was 1998 was the Welsh Gold Rush. It was always referred to of bouldering, and there must have been hundreds of new lines going up every week. And that's when I really started getting good at it. I was always really interested, completely obsessed, really, by finding out how hard I could pull on a piece of rock. So the major part of my life, the whole point of my life back then, was to get into the hills and just search and scour the landscape for these lines. With hard bouldering, when it gets that difficult, you know, you've really got to know every single element of the piece of rock that you're working on, that you're trying to climb. And always when you about to succeed on a line and climb it for the first time, you could feel it. You'd sit down at the bottom of the rock and you just wait for the right moment. Everything aligns, the breeze, the temperatures, the rock, you, all comes together like a real synergy. And before you know it, you're sat at the top of the piece of rock. And that feeling, if you could put that in a bottle, you could sell it for millions.
Hi guys, just a quick interruption from us. Enjoying today's Ordinarily Inspired chat? Yeah, us too. To join the journey, you can follow us on social media at It's The Living Project. Or if you fancy a really powerful, wild experience yourself, check out our website, www.thelivingproject.life, and have a look at our Wild 24 and other stuff you can get involved with. On our website, you can also become a patron. We love making these podcasts, but it takes some effort, and we'd love you to join the community and support our efforts in finding everyday epic people around the world to explore their journey with the wild and to share their experience with us all. www.thelivingproject.life, and that's become a patron. Any amount will be gratefully received. Right then, back to the chat.
You've just described something that sounds remarkably special to experience. So what made you stop climbing?
Yeah, well, that was a real difficult one. I think there was a couple of things. I had done it for a long time, and it was getting harder to find that feeling. I found myself thinking a few times, you know, you've been doing the same thing for like 2 decades, for 20 years. You know, is it time for something else? And at the same time, I kind of always felt a little bit guilty, I think. When I got to a certain age, I sort of thought, wow, I'm still focusing a lot on myself and what I need and want. And it's always really weird with my life. Things sort of seem to come to some sort of head and it's time to move on. And with this one, I've been training really hard, actually. And at the same time, I'd come across a blog written by an American runner called Matt Flaherty. He's an incredible trail runner and has been for years. And I was just sort of sat at home reading a blog about his, and he'd just been over to Patagonia to run an ultra marathon in the Torres del Paine National Park. And it looked incredible. And I went on the website for this particular sort of ultra race. And I thought, right, I fancy doing that. So I remember talking to Ellie, my partner, and said, look, I'm just thinking about signing up for this race in Patagonia. And I remember just looking at me, just shaking her head, thinking, oh my God, you can't just drop in at breakfast time that you're thinking about going to run a race and, you know, 8,000 miles away in Chile and think that's okay. So I worked on it for a bit, and I got the nod from Ellie to sort of sign up, so I did. And I started training for that then.
You said something that was really intrigued me. You said in your life, you feel that things always come to a head. And I'm wondering, you know, as you're telling your story, like lots of people, you've said things like you get obsessed. It's all or nothing. You want to excel at everything that you do. And you've talked about that in the music context and then into bouldering and climbing. And now you're taking on us on this new part of your journey, which is ultra running. But you know, this sounds like this cycle that's repeating itself there, and things coming to a head. As you've got a little bit older and there's a few grey hairs in your beard now, do you feel you've kind of got a more of a sense of yourself and what that coming to a head is all about? And do you think you've been learning something about yourself that's really, really important for yourself moving forward?
Yeah, I think so. I'm always really aware that I push things to their sort of absolute limit, really. I think with all the things that I do, again, it's a difficult one to analyse. You sort of wonder why things come to a head. And I think it's because I do go pretty hard into things that I come across that hook me. And I think because of that maybe, you know, subconsciously, you stop doing things before you burn out because you want to kind of finish things on a high point when you were operating at a particular level, and then you kind of move on. I think for me, I've always felt it's the right time to just leave something and move on. But I can't really explain it. I think I do know myself very well as a person. So I don't know. really. It's a hard question to answer, or a hard thing to think about, really. It just always seems like the right time sometimes to go and do something different.
Mm.
Unless those things just come along at the right time, I don't know.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, we've had conversations with people on the show before about whether there's signs or whether there's something, you know, universe gives you what you need, or whether actually you're an activist. And I guess we all create the story we choose in order to create the version of our lives that fits for us, right? So I guess there's elements of all of that. And you've talked about, you know, connection with the mountains in Wales at home, the rock in climbing, the kind of the fun and commitment and the exploration of the new, I suppose, has come through to me in both the music and the bouldering and the climbing. And now we move on to this kind of third major phase, this Chris Davies the ultra runner phase. And I would love to hear a little bit about what it is about that ultra running that is about your truth and about the way you feel about life and the way you want to engage with this new passion / obsession.
Yeah, it's funny actually. I think with all of the elements of sort of what I've done with my life, it's all about, for me, it's always about learning about who I am. You know, I don't think it's something we ever sort of know, really. I think it's just an ongoing thing, isn't it? Learning about yourself as life rolls on. And, you know, running was great. Just going for a bit of a jog was awesome, but it wasn't challenging enough. You know, it wasn't hard climbing. It wasn't, punk music. It wasn't that. But when I started running further and getting into ultra runner, it became that replacement challenge for me. And I wouldn't say I'm as obsessed with ultra running as I was with climbing. And I think it's because I'm older, and hopefully a little bit wiser. I do know myself more.
Yeah.
And it's just something that I really enjoy. You know, I love doing it. There's nothing to prove to anybody. No one cares what you're doing. You know, you put your running shoes on and you set foot on a trail and you can run for like 100 miles. And, you know, nobody else is involved in that. No one even needs to know you're doing it. You're just out there having your own experience and again learning a lot about yourself. And that's what I like about it. It's completely timeless. You know, I can go and run for like 40 miles, and if I didn't put it on Strava or take any pictures of the views whilst I was out there, no one would know that I'd done it. And you know, and who would care anyway? It's just something that's totally for me. I'm just going for a run, and that's the simplicity of it. It's the beauty of it, I think, for me. And I think I learned more about myself running than I did doing anything else. It's a great way to keep learning about yourself.
Yeah, let's explore that a little bit more then, Chris. Earlier you were telling us about, you started telling us about Patagonia, and I think there was a race there that get your attention that you wanted to participate in. So I'd love to know whether or not you did that. And also, yeah, tell us about Patagonia and about ultra running and what you've learned about yourself.
Yeah, I think I've had real true immersion in the mountains and been really in alignment with, you know, the sort of earth really for a long time throughout all of my climbing. I've had some incredible experiences there, some really sort of out of body bouldering experiences, but then when you translate that into long distance running, you are so involved in the environment. It's incredible. And that did all start in Patagonia. I think 9 months I trained for it, because I was a dreadful runner. I was rubbish. I just really liked it, and lots of learning curves along the way there, but getting there was amazing to actually start. You know, everyone's at the start line and you're feeling nervous, and you know, it's the same with any of the races that I do now or my own runs. The minute you start running and your first foot hits the ground, you're just involved in it and everything else goes out the window. All of the worries, all of the concerns, you're just part of that experience, which is amazing. Again, I've got goosebumps now just talking about it. And I just remember it was the longest marathon I ever ran, because I didn't want it to end. I just really, I just took my time. I wasn't bothered about getting a sub four. You know, I'm not like a sub three marathon runner, by the way. I'm a sub four if I'm lucky. And I just took my time. There was a condor flew overhead, running along Lago Grey, seeing the towers alongside you, and the weather going on up there was mental. We had like 70 mile an hour gusts on the race. And there was a team of three girls got blown off the road into a ditch whilst we were running. It was full on. And I think for me, that's what made it. The wilder, the better, I think, for me with runs. If it's sunny, I just get a bit bored, really.
I guess, Chris, what I'm really interested in when I hear you talk about this is I come through a lot about this journey of self and all the things, because you did Patagonia, you finished it, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it's amazing.
And then you kind of, and then you went on to do the Snowdon Ultra in Wales, which is looks like an absolutely brutal race. Like from Patagonia, I suppose, and from the Snowdon Ultra, what do you, because you said that you learn about yourself in these experiences, that's where you learn the most about yourself. What is it you've learned about yourself by doing these epics, the Patagonia Ultra and the Snowdon Ultra and these ultra runs that you do?
I have learned that I'm extremely capable, really. I've got a really good sense of exactly where I am and who I am. Most definitely. And I know what I'm capable of, and I know what I can achieve. And, you know, I know when I need to reel it in as well, and when I need to stop. And I think that, you know, just going back to Patagonia briefly, I remember the last 5K, I remember it like it was yesterday, and I remember sitting on this wall. I remember looking up to the mountains and thinking, you know, how good do you have to be to be able to run up there and really experience those sorts of big environments by yourself. So when I got home, I started looking into what there was out there. And then I didn't even know that 100 mile races were a thing. I knew people ran a long way. I didn't know quite how far. So I got a few books, a few of the sort of more famous, I guess, American ultra runners, and started reading about their experiences. And they were really connected to their environments. The way they described their experiences in the hills, I just thought, right, yeah, that is where I want to take this. And I just think that the more you can challenge yourself, the more you're going to learn about yourself. And that, I think that's the bottom line. So I started running sort of flatter miles in the forests around Betsacoid, up in the Gwydir Forest, and sort of building up sort of 10, 20, 30, 40 miles over a kind of a 5-month period. So I had quite an intense introduction, really, I think, into ultra running, going from like sort of running, you know, sort of 28 miles in Patagonia through to running 50 miles 4 months later. You know, I sort of thought, okay, this is something I'm adept at. The summer before I ran the race, I did it in two halves by myself. So I did two sort of 50 miles in the mountains just to sort of see how it would feel. And I was really proud of myself just for having got to that point, because it just, you know, a few times along the way, it just seemed so hard. You know, what was I thinking? Was it something that I was going to succeed at? And then I think once I'd run both halves and I knew it so well, and I became really relaxed in the mountains, and I felt that I knew them well and they were getting on with me. You know, it's like it was a mutual experience. To put them together and actually run that race was incredible. I don't think I'll ever have an experience like that again in ultra running. That was such an incredible feeling to all of the way through that. I can't even explain it, really. It's impossible. People say it a lot, that it's like a year and a day. And it is. You know, every single emotion you have over a 12-month period instilled into 30-odd hours of your life. That's what it is.
You're reminding me of something I was reading about this sect of Japanese Buddhist monks, that in order to reach enlightenment, their rigorous training is about running. And they run, their training program takes 7 years. and they end up in the seventh year of doing two back-to-back marathons 100 days in a row. And it's their way, the way they talk about the experience they have, you know, the hardships, the challenges. And for them, it's all about overcoming matter with their mind and being able to, I suppose, build up this resilience so that they can overcome pain, suffering with their mind by going through this experience. And what you've sort of been describing also in a equally eloquent way is by doing this ultra running, have you at any point felt a sense of enlightenment, or that actually this stuff that you're putting yourself through has really started to, yeah, enlighten? What I mean is enlightened as in that you're able to cope with life in a much broader sense than you were when you were much younger.
Yeah, I think that with my climbing, I think in all aspects of my life, when I was involved in that, I always felt really confident. Just because you're aware of yourself and your capabilities, I think that carried on into your personality outside of the sort of climbing arena. Mm-hmm. And with ultra running, it's probably a lot stronger than that. Mm-hmm. You know, bouldering was hard, but you know, you kind of nipped out for a climb, and an hour and a half later, you're in the pub having a pint. And you know, you set out on a 100-mile run, you could still be out there 40 hours later. Looking at enlightenment, yeah, absolutely happens. When you're moving for 100 miles through mountainous environment, your body's probably, you know, completely gone by 50 yeah. miles. Mm. And then it all becomes mind over matter and resilience and knowing yourself. And mentally tapping into an area of your personality you didn't even know existed. And you can't get to that point unless you do it. You know, I'm sure there are other ways to become as enlightened, but for me, that I couldn't have discovered those sorts of things about myself unless I'd got involved in distance running. And I remember I got halfway through the Snowdon Ultra, and I was completely, completely broken. You know, I'd spent hours dry heaving all over my shoes. I'd gone through cramps. I'd cried going up mountains, and I couldn't deal with it at all. I thought, well, no one's going to do it for you. And I literally had my head in my hands. I was so gone mentally and physically, I couldn't work out what to do. I thought, do I go to sleep? Do I stand up? Do I start running again? Do I throw in the towel? And my mate Tom is really straight up, and he just reeled off the options that I had. And he just said, look, you didn't start this to finish it now. You started it to see it through to the end, but it's your decision and you have to make it. So I remember I fell asleep there for about 20 minutes, and then I woke up, and I remember vividly, literally, I was lying down in the back of my car, and I started packing my bag systematically to go back out for the second 50 miles. Laced my shoes up, got out of the car, I said, right, we're going. And that was it. And I completely came back around physically, and mentally, it was almost like something just clicked, and I was completely compos mentis, and I thought, okay, I can completely deal with this. There's no way I'm not finishing this race, and I can feel it. And we just moved steadily through the last 50 miles, you know, a few more mountains, lots of hallucinations, staring off into space, soul searching, lay down on the floor a few times, you know, sitting on rocks. And I remember we were coming down through the forests back to the finishing line. And I know it's downhill, right? It's downhill. I've been there hundreds of times. I had to ask. I had no idea. I said, should I be running now? Or are we walking uphill? Is this flat? Are we going downhill? I don't know. I couldn't work out what was up or down. It was mental. I had no sense of the angle of the road that I was trying to move along. But yeah, it was funny. The sense of self awareness when I got to the finish line was just incredible. And I remember getting home, I went straight to bed, I was exhausted. And it wasn't until the next day that I had that sort of real epiphany of what I'd achieved. And I think social media's got a really good place sometimes. And I just switched on my laptop and there were hundreds of messages from people that had been following my tracker all the way through the race. And friends that were out there with me along the course had been putting up, you know, updates about what I was up to and how I was getting on. And I burst into tears. I must have been crying for about 10 minutes. And it all just came flooding in. What I'd actually achieved myself was unbelievable. And that was it then. I just went from there with the whole activity of running distance.
Magic. Absolutely magic. What a wonderful place to leave it, Chris. Thank you so much for sharing some of your journey with the wild today with us on The Living Project.
No, that was fine. I'm really glad you asked me to come along. It's been really nice to catch up. And to be honest, it's a trip down a crazy memory lane.
So listeners, we hope you've really enjoyed our chat with Chris today. The wild has clearly been a place where Chris has explored his limits, but also been a place where he's engaged in a challenging journey of self, of self-understanding, self-awareness, self-development. And the wild has been key to that, from childhood, playing in the forest, to making a decision to move from the punk music scene into bouldering, his relationship with rocks, to one day signing up to fly to Patagonia to run 28 miles in Torres del Paine National Park and completing the Snowden Ultra the next year, 100 miles and over 30,000 metres of ascent. So clearly the wild's been pretty powerful for Chris. What in the wild has been powerful for you? Thanks again for joining us. We look forward to seeing you next time.
In the meantime,
be true, live wild.
Beautiful. You've been listening to The Living Project with Josh Bulpin and Cormac Davey.
Enjoyed it? Please subscribe, follow, rate, and share with everyone you know. See you next time.
Be true, live wild.